Today is a really fun episode for us because we get to introduce to you the people that we bought our new truck camper from.
We're about to go on this worldwide adventure, taking our Toyota Land Cruiser and shipping it down to South America. But these people have already done that and more.
And you guys actually requested for us to have them on the podcast. So their names are Sebastian and Melanie, and they are the wonderful people who renovated the amazing truck camper that we now call ours. They are actually from Germany originally, live in Switzerland, so they have really cool accents, and they're just experienced overlanders, fascinating people, world travelers, and they're going to talk to us today a little bit about their experiences on the Pan American, a little bit specifically about our truck camper, and they're just fun, fascinating, kind people, and I think you're going to enjoy this.
Yeah, they're going to give us tips on what to do, what not to do, what to expect. So it was really beneficial for us, and we think it's going to be beneficial for you. But before we get into the conversation, again, we just have to ask you, leave a review for this show. It means the world to us.
It does. So thank you. All right. If you're watching the video version, you just saw me roll my eyes at Chris. Yeah.
All right. Let's just jump into the conversation. Melanie, Sebastian, thanks for being here, guys.
Hi.
Thanks for having us.
So for those who don't know you, I know you guys have a pretty good Instagram following. You're very well known in the overland world. Just explain to us who you are, where you're from. No, you are. You've got a name.
You say so.
Tell us who you are, where you're from, and maybe some of your past experiences.
Exactly what you just said. So we're originally from Germany, but now living in Switzerland since like 10 plus years-ish. And we traveled twice with the camper. Once it was 18-19, right?
Yeah, 2018-2019.
Yeah, South America, a little bit of Central, and 3 months in the States. And then last time around was 22 to 23.
Yep.
And that's when we sold our truck to you.
Which we're very thankful for. Yeah. We absolutely love it. I think we fall more in love with it every day.
Well, and Sarah is completely right. I mean, honestly, we'll get stopped every day in the truck by random strangers, but then occasionally people will come up to us and they'll be like, oh, this is Melanie and Sebastian's truck. And they like, they
that's
know
happened
you
several
guys.
Times now. They're like, I saw this one online. This is Melanie and Sebastian. This is the Campulence.
Yeah, yeah,
yes,
yeah.
Yes, it is.
So how did you, what made you, let's just start at the beginning. Like what made you decide to like renovate this truck and then start traveling?
I think for this one, it was mostly coincidental, to be honest. We had a Land Cruiser before that, the BJ45, the red one. And initially, like if we want to go all the way back, how it happened. So we've done a lot of backpacking, and at some point, I was like, well, I wish I would have had more flexibility, mostly in South America, because a lot of the really cool stuff is so far off the beaten path that unless you have your own transportation, there's not really a good way for you to get there. Or you can only look at one or two things if you're on a regular two-week holiday, because it's just too much effort logistically to get there. It's easy to get to stuff like Machu Picchu or anything that has a good tourist infrastructure. But if you want to go, say, to the Altiplano or places like that and really explore, there's no hotels or anything like that. So unless you bring your own bed, you're not going to be able to really spend any significant amount of time there. And at the time when we were looking for anything to travel in, we didn't really have that much experience. So the initial thought was to get like a Mitsubishi, I think in the US it's called a Mitsubishi Delica, so like an L200, which has the four-wheel drive system of a Pajero, but obviously the van body, so you get a little more space. And we were really focused on that one because it's sort of like a nimble, small little 4x4 van. And then this one popped up, the red one, and we were like, okay, I mean, it was way more expensive than we
wanted it to be.
Yeah, exactly. It was way more money than we were, like it was three times the amount of money that we were planning on spending for the vehicle. And then we went there and it was just so incredible that we ended up buying it. And then we traveled in it for a year, and at the end of the trip, we realized that it wasn't the right truck for us for the future, because the way that it was set up was that you could only stand inside when the pop top was open, and you could either have the dinette area or the bed. Like you would always convert the dinette area to the bed, and the same for the kitchen. Like it had a gas stove that you needed to take out, and All of those things are fine if you're traveling for a limited amount of time. But if you live full time out of it for, say, a year or more, every additional move that you have to make to set something up becomes annoying eventually if you do it 5-6 times a day. And so we're like, okay, and it's too slow, too loud, let's sell it. And then on that trip, we were in Guatemala on a campground, and a Dutch couple was staying on the campground with the truck camper that we then built out that you guys have now. And because it had the same engine and a very similar drivetrain and very similar axles, and they weren't really the car guys, they just more or less ended up by chance. They were like, okay, what's a reliable 4x4 to travel the world? Okay, Land Cruiser. Okay, let's get one. And they hit the jackpot, to be honest, with that one. And when I looked at it, I was pretty amazed because it didn't, like, the main thing is it was low mileage and it had zero corrosion, which for European, older European vehicles isn't necessarily the case because of the salt on the roads in wintertime. But I think, first of all, the previous owner had done, like, proper conservation work at the beginning, like, you know, putting wax in all the hollow areas. And it was in such good shape that more jokingly than serious, I said, well, if you ever want to sell it, let me know. And then in, I think 2021 or 2020?
2020.
Exactly. January 2020, they messaged me and they were like, well, we're having a kid and we're moving to France. Like, would you be interested in the truck? And to be honest, like the truck before that, it wasn't exactly a rocket ship either. So I was like, I'm never going to buy a truck that slow again.
And without AC.
Right. And then
won't happen.
That one was already retrofitted with a turbo, the red one. And then when we actually went to test drive the one that you guys have now, it's the exact same engine, but without the aftermarket turbo. Oh. So you can imagine how sluggish that one was. It was not moving at all. It was like, wow, but it's kind of like exactly the right size.
It's a Land Cruiser.
It's in really good shape. And yeah. I did some research on the cabin beforehand, like on the shell on the back. And those years, the way that they are constructed, like they tend to leak once all the sealant becomes hard and brittle. So we checked that. We knew there was some issues, but we figured, okay, we could just fix that. And then, we ended up buying it. And it was kind of lucky because we brought it over, I think, on the last weekend before they closed the borders because of COVID.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, because if we wouldn't have been, like, obviously we didn't know that at the time, like COVID had sort of just started and they were sort of closing the borders for all non-essential traffic, like anyone that wasn't, you know, didn't have to commute for work or something like that.
Yeah.
And we parked it initially at my sister's house in Germany, and then we brought it over and we were like, oh, that was a close call.
Yeah.
And
it
sort of became our COVID project.
Yeah. Sanity project.
I think everyone had one of those. We definitely were working on our van during COVID.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was going to ask, how long did it take you guys to renovate it? So I don't know if we've even shared with our audience how much you guys did to the camper. Maybe we should put some pictures in the podcast, like the video podcast, of like what it looked like before and during. Because you guys, when we bought the camper from y'all, you gave us pictures of everything, the before, the middle, and the after. So could you explain to people how much work you really did on this thing?
All of it.
Yeah.
Basically all of it. Yes. We took everything out, including the windows. We replaced everything. We even had the back wall out. That is underneath the huge window. Everything we reconstructed everything and built it from scratch. But we had the guidelines from the previous build.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, the way that it's constructed, as you know, it has like a fifth of an inch plywood on the inside, and the water damage was a little more extensive than we thought because they use like a plastic foil on top of the plywood. So you don't realize how much water is actually in the wall until you pull the plastic foil off. And when we did that, we realized that the entire cab over area at the bottom was rotten away essentially. And we, at that point, you have that nagging voice in the back of your head, like, what if this is also in other places in the camper? So we're like, well, I guess
behind the kitchen.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess the only way to find out and really make sure, because we said if we put this much effort and that much money into the truck, we might as well do it right.
Yeah.
And that was sort of the decision to completely gut it. And then, you know how it is, like you pick up one stone and there's like five more tasks underneath, and it just spirals from there and becomes it snowballs, and then you realize that, you know, at some point, once you've taken everything out, you've essentially completely destroyed the value of the car, right? You've created a piece of scrap that's worth a fraction of what you started with because it's completely taken apart. And then you start putting it back together. And I think the total time was about 2 years.
1.5, 2 years.
Yeah.
Almost every weekend, 2 days.
Yep. Wow. Well, you did a beautiful job. We absolutely love it. And so when you guys, since you stripped it down to practically nothing, I can't remember what the layout was in it for. Did you guys keep most of the same layout or did you change it to get exactly what you wanted? I can't remember.
Almost everything.
Yeah. I mean, the window cutouts were already there, right? And you can't really change the gigantic holes in the hull that are already there. So we had to stick with the original layout, which is great because you have the huge window in the back. So from a comfort kind of level, that's the best layout in my opinion that you can have, because you have the three big windows in the rear, which give you like, you know, a 270 degree view of the area. The only downside is like if you want to go off-roading, you'd like to have the weight all the way in the front. So usually one of the most traditional layouts in those vans is that you have two benches sort of into the direction of travel. And under one, you have all the infrastructure for water, and on the other one, all the infrastructure for electricity, but it's all the way in the front as much as it can be. And in the rear, you have the kitchen and the bathroom, and the bathroom is a big empty space that essentially hardly weighs anything unless, you know, you put a sink in or something. But if it's just a shower pan and that's it, then yeah, that's usually the traditional layout. But we stuck with the original one.
Besides, the kitchen now is a little wider.
Okay.
Yeah.
And also the whole water tank system, we put that into the front to counter that problem with the weight.
Yes.
Wow. So for the climb through, that step wasn't there. Uh-huh. That was sort of the necessity. That like the compromise that we had to make to be able to fit the big water tank. Mm-hmm. The original one was, I think, 10 gallons or something.
Oh, that's not
and it was all the way in the back in the underneath storage. So as far away from the center of the vehicle as it could be, and it didn't make any sense. So we said, okay, we need to move this forward. And, you know, like the compromise is that you sort of have to climb into the shower. So, yeah, mm-hmm. But we were like, okay, we need to do that once a day.
Yeah.
That's manageable.
Yeah,
and we wanted to have enough water for a couple of days in the room.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's I think when people have been in our camper, and we haven't done a full tour on YouTube yet, which will be coming in the coming weeks. But I think people are like, they ask the most, like, is that shower kind of annoying? And we don't really think about it anymore.
No.
I mean, the first couple of weeks I got bruises on my legs and stuff trying to climb in and out of it until I got the rhythm. I figured it out. But no, I would totally do exactly what you guys did in a heartbeat. Having 37 gallons of water. I mean, that's like, I think our first van had 30 gallons almost.
Mm-hmm.
Game changing having 37. It is so much
like
water.
We never have to think about it.
100%.
Yeah. And so, it does. We can feel the weight, the difference when we fill it up. We can feel it. It almost like feels like it stabilizes it a little bit.
Yeah. And it's funny with this mm-hmm. truck. I mean, so in the past, we have previously owned two Sprinter vans, and those were great. Like we really don't have complaints about those at all. But one of the things we would always get confused, by watching other people, because people are like, oh, we have our friends over in our van. We, you know, we like to host people and hang out. And we're like, why are these people doing this? There's not enough space. We would never do this. But now in the truck, we have hosted so many people in this truck. Yeah. It is so much room. It's pretty amazing.
We have so many mornings this winter because we were out in this summer. We were out in the PNW and it'd be really cold in the morning, like after a morning hike. And we'd have, you know, a couple of friends over. We'd make morning coffee and because you guys made the booth where it's three people already. And then you can add the fourth seat in. I can't tell you the number of times we've had people in there already. Yeah. The booth is awesome. Having that giant window in the back, we can both work at the table with laptops. Like it is.
It's amazing.
That's probably our favorite thing about it so far.
We actually realized that on this trip with that truck, we used the outside table and chairs way less, because if you open all windows, it's almost like you're sitting outside.
Yeah.
With the last truck on the first trip, we were hardly ever inside because it was
tiny
sort of
windows.
It was tiny windows. It was small. Mm. But this one, like especially if you're only there for like one day and you don't fully set up camp because you don't want to set up camp and break camp in the evenings, you're like, okay, whatever, you can just open all windows and you're done.
Yeah.
That's it. Put the mosquito blinds down so you don't have the mosquitoes inside. Yep. Done.
Yeah. We love it. We love it. And I know you guys said you never use the Dutch door in it, which, by the way, gets a lot of compliments over in the States. We absolutely love the Dutch door because we can open it halfway and Kramer can kind of sit there and look out, but he can't actually get out all the way. So
the pictures.
We love it.
Yeah, we've never, I don't think we've used it once.
Nope, not once.
Ever. We thought, oh, this is amazing. And then we're like, well, we got the windows.
Right.
So. That's awesome.
We'll use it for you. Don't worry.
So, after, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to.
I know, you're good, just keep going.
So, like, you spent 2 years building this out. Every weekend, your entire, like, focus for 2 years, I want to say entire focus, but you, I mean, for the majority of time, you're focusing on building this truck out so that you can travel. And then when you finally complete it.
At some point,
right?
At the beginning, that wasn't actually, we didn't have a plan to travel.
Really?
Yeah, that came during the build.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, we started the build like for no good reason other than we just wanted to have something
better to do.
And then it was like at some point, once, you know, like when all the COVID craziness happened, we're like, well, you know, another trip would kind of be nice.
Yeah.
We had a lot of work during COVID. I mean, everyone who went online, I don't have to explain that. Everyone knows how it felt back then. And so it was like, okay, we worked a lot, quite a lot, 5 days a week, and then 2 days on the weekend for the truck. And then I felt like, okay, let's maybe, why not? Why not take a year off again?
Yeah. I mean, I think you have to add that we didn't work like on the truck 2 years full time. The problem was that we live smack in the middle of Zurich, and a truck that size, you can't park it here. There simply is no sheltered parking for a truck that's 10 foot tall. It just doesn't exist because all the underground parking is suited to like regular sized vehicles. So if you want to do something like that here, you sort of have to find a barn on a farm or something where you can store it. And the closest that we could find was like a 35, 40 minute drive. So anytime you wanted to build something, it was never an option to just do 1 or 2 hours, a little bit of wiring after work or something like that. It didn't work that way. Like it was always a full day commitment. And then obviously if you do that, you want to make the most of it, meaning you leave early in the morning, you stretch the day as long as you can, you come back in the evening, and it kills your social life because if friends do something during the day, you're not part of it anymore, or you leave and you forget the keys back home or whatever. Like there were so many things, or even if you wanted to order parts, you couldn't just quickly go down and tape measure something to figure out how big the part that you needed was going to be. So you had to wait until next weekend, measure it, go back, order it, wait, you know, I don't know how long for the part to arrive. And that's also, I think, why it took so long to actually build it, because it was always on the weekends. And
it was hard to get parts.
Yeah, it was hard to get parts because of COVID. Like the hardware stores at some point were closed. You could only do a certain, like a limited amount of online shopping, in the sense that the super bulky parts like wooden panels were really hard to get. And if you could get them, it wasn't the lightweight wood that you wanted for a camper build. It was always like the super heavy stuff. And obviously
it was a lot of waiting.
Yeah. Yeah. It was challenging sometimes.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Well, you did. I mean, I know it was probably frustrating spending 2 years on it and having to go through that slow process, but you guys put a lot of attention into detail, and we appreciate that.
Yeah, we do. So do you think,
we had time to think about it.
That's where I was getting. That's where I was heading with that.
So, I mean, in your mind, what was it worth it? Like, was the 2 years building it out and then finally putting it on a boat and like shipping it across the ocean to travel, like because you spent a year traveling doing the Pan American, which is, you know, for our listeners who don't know, the Pan American is this trail. It's kind of like a road. Well, is it one road?
It's a road. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one road from basically like South America to North America. So you eventually did that, but in your mind, was it
not in this one?
No, that was in the first
one.
No.
We split it.
Yeah,
right?
That's right.
This time it was only Mexico and the US and a tiny bit of Canada.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, last time South America.
Yeah.
Yes. Wow. Yes.
Oh man. So
I knew that.
I know. Yeah. Now I'm getting it all mixed up. So, all right. So, but like in your mind, what is the travel worth it for you? Like was the experiences in Mexico and the US and all that traveling in it? What was it worth the long weekends and the long days building this truck out?
It was 100% what we expected, because on the last trip, I mean, last one, meaning with the BJ45, it was sort of like we traveled through South America and the US was at the very end. And at the time, we're like, well, is it going to feel the same way to travel in the US? Because obviously the infrastructure is much more advanced, right? So we thought, is it really going to be like the same feeling of adventure and roughness? Because, you know, like you go to the next town, you get a Walmart, you get a laundromat, and it's just easy. And in South America, a lot of your time disproportionately is taken up by running errands, mm-hmm. as ridiculous as it sounds. Like I would probably say like one day a week on average, at least you're full time busy with just doing your laundry, doing grocery shopping and finding water, refilling your propane and stuff like that.
I mean, Overland is a huge help, but still.
Yes.
Yeah. And then when we started traveling the US, we realized, oh, wow, there's so much more to what you typically see as a European tourist ending up either in New York, Florida, or California. Like, that's the three areas that most people will travel to when you go to the US for the first time. That's just how it is.
Yeah. Yes.
And then if you're like fully self-contained and you can start traveling Utah and Arizona, you're like, oh, wow, okay, there's this whole huge chunk of land that you can really explore, and it is absolutely incredible, especially if you're fully self-contained. So at the time when we were doing the Pan Am, when we met people from the US, we're always wondering, like, why are so few of them driving down, you know, south of the US into Mexico and down the Pan Am? Because it's incredible, and it truly
so
is
beautiful.
Incredible. But also at the same time, when you start traveling the US, you realize that from a landscape point of view, there really is no good reason to leave the US. You got everything. You got, you know, Glacier National Park, Alpine Mountains in the north, you got the desert, whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe not culturally, from the point that if you travel through the Pan Am, mm-hmm. you obviously experience a lot of different cultures.
Mm-hmm.
But landscape-wise, you could spend a lifetime in just Utah and never be done with it and still explore. So, yeah.
But yeah, coming back to your question, that's absolutely worth it. No, it's absolutely worth it, because we knew somewhat what to expect, because we already traveled for a year with the other camper. And so all these 1.5-2 years of building it out, it's quite a learning curve. That is one part of it. So we've learned a lot. And then in the end, you had the goal of traveling, and that was fun and awesome and great, and we loved it.
Yeah.
Sorry for completely derailing from your initial question.
No, that's a great point.
I was gonna go full circle and be like, and knowing that, we knew exactly what to expect, and given that we had lived out of the first truck for 14 months, we knew exactly our priorities, right?
Yeah.
So when I built the truck and I was active in forums asking questions, they were like, why do you want a 35 or 40 gallon tank, like water tank, in a truck that small? It's like, you don't need to debate that with people who go on a 2-week camping
trip. Right.
Yeah.
Like, there's just no, so, but I was like, don't worry about it. That's what I want to do. I don't have to, or we don't have to always fill it up. If we need less water, we're only going to make it half full.
Yep. For sure.
But if we decide to go, I don't know, the hole in the rock road to go hiking for a week, then we need a water tank that size. That's just how it is.
Yep.
And from that perspective, the truck ticked all the boxes. Like, it was 100% what we expected. It was 100% worth building it.
Mm-hmm.
But still, I wouldn't want to do it in the same way again, unless you have like a shed or a garage right next to your house, so you can, you know, spend 1-2 hours at a time. And it doesn't always have to be like such a huge full day commitment.
Mm.
I can understand that.
Yeah.
I do want to kind of maybe pivot this conversation to actually where Sebastian was going, and that's the actual travels. So maybe can you guys dive? You were on the right track. I was like, that's where I wanted to head. So this is good. Do you want to start with their first travel and their first camper first, or do you want to go to the one they traveled?
Yeah, let's go to the first travel.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, ask your travel question. I'm just going to derail it back to into a building question.
This is great. No, we'll just go wherever you guys want to go. I want to hear about the Pan American Highway, because a lot of people by now know that we are shipping ours down, hopefully, December. I mean, you know what it's like. Getting all the shipping stuff organized is just a little bit of a nightmare. But you know that
it's a process.
It is very much a process. You know that we're about to head down there. So could you guys give... We just want to hear your experiences as much as you're willing to share of Argentina, Chile, everything. Talk to us about the Pan American Highway. Oh, that's a loaded question.
How long do you want this podcast to
be? I just realized that's a really loaded question.
So all in all, I don't know. So we've spent, what was it, eight and a half months around that in South America. So we tripped to Colombia, went all the way down, zigzagged around the Pan Am Highway to Patagonia, to Ushuaia, and then went all the way up again.
Wow.
And then shipped out of Colombia again.
Okay.
So I would say do it one way.
Okay.
So good start. Really good start. So if you start in the south and then driving your way up, that is awesome.
Okay.
And take your time. And we had, what was it, in Bolivia? Maybe.
It was not much. Yeah, the problem was that we had agreed to go hiking in Patagonia with friends over Christmas. Well, it wasn't a problem. Like,
no, it was awesome.
We're looking forward to it. But the thing is that we started our trip in June in Colombia, mm-hmm. and we agreed to meet them down in Patagonia for Christmas.
Oh, no.
And you're like, okay, 6 months is plenty. And then you realize it's not at all. Like, and we spent, I think, 6 or 7 weeks in Colombia. And we're like, well, if we're going at that rate, we're going to have to meet them next year for Christmas because it's not going to work out. And obviously, that's exactly how it ended up. Like, we traveled at our pace and managed to go about mid-Peru, the southern end of Peru, before we realized, okay, now we really got to rush. Mm-hmm. And it sort of forced us to do Bolivia in 12 days, which sucked because I had been backpacking in Bolivia before, and it's such a cool country. Mm-hmm. Well, that goes for any of the countries. Mm-hmm. There literally isn't any country in South America that we've been to where I was like, oh, well, that was kind of overrated. Like, every single country has something cool to offer. Mm-hmm. And I mean, retrospectively, if we knew that we were going to do North America 4 years later, I would have probably recommended to spend the full 14 months that we had, or not recommended, but I guess we would have, recommended to us to spend the full 14 months in South America, because it would have taken out the hassle of shipping, mm-hmm. and it would have just given us more time down there.
So yeah, recommendation one is take your time as much as you have, as much as possible, and then enjoy the ride, because a lot of people are kind of, they overthink it. We talked about that before, right? It's South America, and what could happen, and I have to organize it all. No, you arrive there, the people are amazing, the food is great, and you can just enjoy your time.
That's exactly what we plan on doing. We don't know how long we're going to be down there. At first, we were kind of thinking maybe a year, but then the more I get on iOverlander and I start looking at these campsites and start digging through Google Maps and start looking at all these different places, mm-hmm. I don't know how long we're going to be there. But I am curious, did you guys ever get off the Pan American route? Did you guys venture over to Brazil or anything like that?
I think...
Not Brazil.
Yeah, I mean, define the Pan American route. If you really mean like driving on that one highway north to south, you venture off it all the time. Mm-hmm. So it's you're sort of zigzagging around it. The nice thing about it is that it's this sort of like corridor that runs around along the Andes, and then you sort of move around in that corridor. But it's from a trip planning perspective, it's a lot easier than say travel the US. Mm-hmm. Because in the US, you can stay on the coast. You can sort of do Nevada and up to, I don't know, Idaho, Montana, or you can even go a little further east to New Mexico, mm-hmm. or you can just zigzag everywhere and backtrack as much as you want, which mm-hmm. we sort of did.
Yeah.
And in South America, it's easier.
You either go up or you go down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So you always also meet the same people, kind of, if you're on the same pace.
I see.
Which is really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. So from a community aspect and meeting other overlanders, South America was better than traveling North America because it wasn't as dispersed. Right. So typically you have two groups. It's either the group that's trying to get to Patagonia for summertime, or it's the group that leaves Patagonia. So either you're going north to south, mm-hmm. and that means you will bump into the same people at certain overlander hotspots where everybody goes, like Machu Picchu or certain campgrounds that are super popular, and or you go the other way around. And the cool thing is that you can sort of, you know, team up for like 4 weeks, 5 weeks, and then wheel together and go to areas that are more remote because it, you know, provides that extra layer of safety in case one vehicle breaks. Because other than like the US, if you're in the in the, you know, Argentinian Puna, if your car breaks, there is nothing. There is no one that you can call. Like you, if you're lucky and something breaks, but the car can still roll, the other person can at least tow you. If you have an axle snap, it's probably going to be a total loss because recovering the vehicle would be more expensive than most vehicles. Not all, obviously, depends on the vehicle, but yeah. So that's that was really cool.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed that.
But yet again, no overthinking because the car is awesome and the Land Cruiser is amazing and it will do the trick.
No, for sure. Yeah. I was even listening to a podcast the other day by, I think it was Overland Journal's podcast, and it was all about why like the 70 series Land Cruiser is the overland vehicle. And I was sitting there thinking, yes, we made the right decision.
So did you have any close calls like while you were traveling down there? Like, I mean, like, or any safety concerns?
Never.
Like, yeah, never.
Zero.
Nope, nothing.
I think the reputation is way worse than it actually is. Like you gotta remember that people live there their entire life, a normal life. And it's just, I think the media portrays it way worse than it actually is. Sure. So obviously you got to trust your gut feeling. Like we did have camp spots where you roll up and it's already dark and you're like, this is maybe not the best option.
Yeah, that was something. If one of us said, I'm not feeling it, then we just
but that's
somewhere else.
Yeah, but that's something that might happen like once every 2 months.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And generally, like we never had one cop that tried to get a bribe out of us.
Wow,
like, amazing. I mean, you hear those stories. And I think the big problem is that that the overlanding community of people that ship their vehicles from Europe or the US down to, or North America down to South America is pretty well connected. Mm-hmm. So if something happens to one overlanding couple or individual, it spreads like wildfire in that community through entries on iOverlander or through Facebook groups.
Yeah.
And at any given time, there's hundreds, if not thousands of vehicles traveling, right? So there's a disproportional bias towards the bad news spreading. It's not like for that one person that had a bad experience, it's not like the other thousand jump online. It's like, well, I didn't have any problems, right? Mm-hmm. So it can feel like it's way worse than it actually is.
Yeah.
And obviously it happens that people get mugged or something like that. But the majority, if something bad happens, it's usually people, you know, that break into cars when they're parked somewhere, mm-hmm. or that you get pickpocketed. But it's over the entire trip, like all trips, both trips combined, we have not met personally one couple that had a violent crime. Mm-hmm. Not one. That's like you have those hearsay stories where like, yeah, we met this couple and they had issues, but not one of them had, you know, was robbed at gunpoint or at knife point or threatened at night or whatever. Like that's just not, it wasn't our experience. And for the vast majority of people that we met, they had very similar experiences. So I think safety is much less of a concern than you would think.
That's rather getting, okay, where's the next good water option or something like this. So it's, but that's,
I think if,
not bad at all.
If you want to talk about dangerous, it can be the traffic in some countries. Mm. I mean, you know, not everyone has licenses, for example, or the illumination at night isn't necessarily up to international standards, I would say. So, I mean, we've seen a car drive, literally driving with you know, a flashlight out the window.
We're
like, okay, that's
you do what you got to do.
I mean, but that's also an unspoken rule. Just don't drive when it's dark.
Yes.
I mean, sometimes it happens because you can't avoid it.
Because it's getting dark really early.
Yeah.
Because it's near the equator.
Yeah.
So,
at least in the north. Yeah.
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 And that's our rule here, even in the States. Like, I mean, it's home to us, but we go to remote places and our rule is we do not drive at night. Like we were actually driving back from Atlanta last night and we almost hit a deer. And I was like, this is why we don't drive at night. Like more for the wildlife than people, but it's like our rule of thumb. We just don't do it.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
And it's potholes or speed bumps.
Yeah.
Speed bumps that aren't marked. And if you hit those at 50 miles an hour, like it destroys everything.
Oh, gosh.
If, you know, it can destroy everything. Yeah. So it's less for the dangers of other people, but more for like the general driving conditions, because the roads aren't the same quality in a lot of places.
For sure. So, you know, our experience in having, we've overlanded the North America area. So we've done Alaska, a lot of Canada, and I think 49 of the 50 states. We're just missing Hawaii.
Yeah,
maybe one day.
Yeah.
But what would be some advice for us you could give, like as far as going from North America to South America? Because like we've said, the whole international overlanding idea is not that popular in the US yet. I mean, you guys are European, you see it a lot more. I'm going to guess that a lot of the people you came across in South America were probably, majority were not American. Maybe I'm wrong on that. But what are some pieces of advice you can offer us going from one continent to the next?
I would say the number one piece of advice is try to learn basic Spanish.
Oh, good point.
Like that is seriously, you don't need a crazy well-equipped car with laser lights and 35-inch tires. Like you can literally do the, I'm serious.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
You can do the Pan Am in any kind of car. And the only thing that determines what kind of car you will use is the level of comfort that you want.
Yeah.
But for the most part, you could pick up, I don't know, a regular SUV and do the whole thing in an SUV with an air mattress in the back.
Mm-hmm.
It absolutely no problem. We've met those people. Depending on your budget, that's exactly what they did, and it works
mm-hmm.
perfectly. Because you got restaurants that are affordable. So for example, in most places we stopped cooking, because going to a restaurant is virtually the same cost as buying the groceries and doing cooking the meal yourself, because labor is just,
And you don't have to wash
cheap.
The dishes.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
And I mean, there's exceptions to that. Like, I don't know, certain areas in Argentina or Chile where it's rather expensive, but if you go to a restaurant in Colombia, Peru, Bolivia, almost makes no difference. So you don't need the crazy amount of preparation. That's what Melly was saying. Like, there's no need to overthink it. We did the same thing. I think that's completely natural. Yeah. If you're heading for the uncertain, but when we were done, it was like, well, that was a lot easier than we expected. And we needed a lot less preparation than we thought.
Oh, and we packed way too much stuff.
Yeah. You take way more stuff than you actually need.
Okay.
Because you can get it everywhere. There's even a Walmart option in Chile.
Yeah.
So crazy.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What was something that you took that you wish you hadn't taken? Cause we're going through the same process right now. We're packing up the truck and doing all these dry fits. What should we leave behind?
Well, it's a very difficult question to answer, because
it
depends on what you're packing, right?
Yeah.
Like anything that's not essential. Like the other way around, if you're asking me what would you take that you actually need, is much easier to answer.
Okay.
So I would say
compressor.
A good compressor
yeah.
is like the number one piece of equipment that we've used all the time. Because,
but you have that one.
Yeah, you got that one built in.
Yep.
So that was like the one thing. A good shovel, maybe
yes.
traction boards,
uh-huh.
just as a worst case scenario, even though we didn't use ours once last time. And apart from that,
I don't know, kitchen stuff, you really just only want
with
the bare essentials,
mm-hmm.
two of everything.
Right.
Because if you meet other travelers, they have everything too.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just combine it.
Yeah.
I mean, also what I wouldn't take is a ton of spare parts, because chances are you're not going to have the right ones, at least not for the heavy, bulky stuff. So, for you guys, the work has already been done, right? Because we packed it in a way that we said, okay, we have one set of wheel bearings, we have gaskets because they're light
mm-hmm.
and they can be hard to source.
Right.
And anything where you can expect a certain amount of wear, like brake pads, maybe that's it. But the good thing is that a lot of Toyotas share parts. So in most countries, you'll be able to get whatever you need.
Yeah.
And it's not exactly like you could take a spare transmission in case it breaks.
Right.
So, and if that happens, you're just going to have to figure it out locally, but that usually works. So even that, like a small box with the most common spare parts that are light and reasonable to take, I would take that. Good set of tools. And that's basically it. Like, it's really hard to What would you leave behind?
I mean, we had our hiking stuff, camping stuff with us, tents and mattresses and whatnot, and we used it once.
Yeah, it's probably not worth it.
In the whole year, where I thought, okay, I mean, if you need it that one time, you can always buy it for cheap.
Right.
And then
it depends, like.
But it really depends on how you want to travel.
Yeah, if you're crazy about climbing and you want to plan your trip around climbing, then obviously it makes sense to take climbing.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
We knew we were going to go hiking in Patagonia, and romanticizing in our heads, we're like, we'll do multi-day hikes all through South America, and we're already short on time, so you're not necessarily doing multi-day hikes multiple times because you just don't have the time, as ridiculous as it sounds.
For sure.
And we ended up using the tent, the sleeping bags, and the mattresses that we brought once in Patagonia. And the rest of the time we were just driving them around,
showing
adding
them the
weight, using space, and never used it. And at the end of the day, we're like, well, we would have been much better off to just rent that stuff on site. Because because if you can do those kinds of activities on site, there will always be someone that rents them out as a business. Mm-hmm. So, and you know, you got to ask yourself, is it really worth driving around 20 pounds of equipment for an entire year or even longer
for that
3-day hike that you're doing that one time? It doesn't make much sense.
Yeah. That's so funny because we did the exact same thing this summer. We took our camping stuff thinking that we were going to go backpacking in Washington with some friends. We never did.
No.
Instead, we all went have a Jeep and
so
we
took
the
back.
Yeah.
And
so we learned that lesson pretty early on.
Every time I would open up the back box, I'd be like, what's all this stuff in here for? Like,
sleeping bags and everything.
Yeah.
That 100% was how it is.
Yeah. That was a huge
issue. But I think that's also, it's a learning process, right? So last time I took all my kitesurfing equipment thinking like, okay, there'll be plenty of opportunities. And there were quite some good opportunities, but I don't like to go in the water if there's absolutely no one else. Mm. Because if something goes wrong, like, you're screwed.
Yeah.
If I'm, you know, 600 feet off the coast and I knock myself out in a jump, like, she can't do anything to save me. So I ended up using it way less than I thought I was going to use it. And then for the trip to the US, I was like, well, I mean, we'd really like to have some, like, one piece of equipment that we can both use at the same time to you know, get out there if there's a beautiful lake or something. So we ended up buying like a pretty wide and thick stand-up paddle for beginners that was like had enough buoyancy to carry us both. And that was honestly, it was awesome because in a lot of places, we used it a lot. And mostly to just run rivers. Like, we would drive next to a river, and what's pretty unique to the US compared to Europe is that you have rivers that run for a long time and don't lose too much altitude. So they don't have crazy rapids, at least, you know, not the ones that we went on at least. And then we would just hitchhike, you know, 20 miles up the river, pump it up, jump into the river and just float it down. And we did that 6 or 7 times. And it was absolutely awesome. Like, that worked well. So I would say, like, choose a piece of equipment where you're like, I'll actually get some use out of it, and then take that. But other than that, I mean, you know, if you're
good hiking boots.
Yeah.
If you're in Peru, you could just buy a surfboard, have it for the amount of time that you're going to be on the coast, and then sell it again or give it to some kid.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to make their day for sure because they probably won't be able to afford it. And depending on your background, obviously, I don't want to, you know, make any assumptions, but, you know, it's probably not going to break the bank if you bought a surfboard for $100-$150, used it for 2 months, and then gave it to someone that, you know, that's happy about it.
For sure. Yeah, no, you're right. And also you mentioned renting, and that's, you know, supporting small businesses and local economies around the world. So
yeah.
I love that. Instead of, you know, hoarding all of our stuff and carrying it around the world, which we probably don't need.
Yeah.
How do we want to wrap up the episode? What are your final questions?
I mean, my final question, it's actually just a thought, like, really, like, thank you. Like, I mean, honestly, we wouldn't be in this truck if it weren't for you guys.
Yeah.
And it honestly just, it means the world to us. We found something that we genuinely love. It's been just so fun. It's been fun to be on this side of the transaction because, you know, when we've sold our vans in the past. Yeah.
That's so hard. I mean, I remember getting to the truck and seeing it for the first time. I told Chris, I was like, I don't want to be too excited in front of them because I could tell you guys were a little bit sad. And it's so hard. I know it's hard to part with it.
Yeah. But I mean, even being able to have you on this podcast and ask you questions or just get your opinion on things. It means the world to us. So thank you for just being so willing. Just thank you.
Yeah, thank you both. We really appreciate
you guys.
You're welcome. Yeah, you're welcome. And please never stop doing the videos because it's so awesome to follow you.
Yeah. I love it. Well, I'm
sure. That's actually really nice. I mean, we're pretty pragmatic about it, I think, because we knew like for the next couple of years, we're not really going to get any appropriate use out of it because it's a truck for like, you know, the kind of travel that you guys are going to do now. So we're like, well, does it really make sense to put it in a garage, use it 2 weeks a year for the next 5 or 6 years? Like things change and then it might not be the right vehicle for us for the future anyway. So
yeah,
it's good to see that you guys actually get some proper use out of it. And I'm pretty sure you're going to be, well, I guess you're already happy, but I'm pretty sure that's going to just continue in the exact same way.
It will. And I'm sure we'll have more questions in the coming days.
Well, you got my contact, so I'll be good chatting.
Yeah.
No, but I hope everything works out with the shipping process and that is off your shoulder and off your and then that you can actually start.
Yes, soon. I hope soon. But we are so excited. We love it already. So thank you guys both so much. And I hope that we can meet up on the road one day, but I know people are probably going to want to go back to your Instagram and check out all your past travels because you guys did document pretty well through South America and North America. So do you guys want to share where they can find that?
Yeah.
You want, only on Instagram, just really easy. It's the_Campulence.
Perfect. We'll link to that down below. And I love that name because it does look like a little ambulance. Your last one does. That's where the name comes from.
Yeah.
The first one.
I love it. Guys, thank you so much. It was so good talking to you and we'll talk soon.
Yeah. Speak soon.
Thanks
for listening to What No One Tells You with Chris and Sarah. If you have a comment or question that you want answered on the air, be sure to send us a message to hello@chrisandsarah.com or you can call or text our phone number at 423-825-9572. Thanks for listening.